Welcome to Aging in Place Strategies and Answers with Linda Prio. Will it be possible to remain in my home as I age? Do I feel safe in my home? How do I figure out how much support I will need when my health needs start to change? What if I decide to move into a community instead? Which community will meet my needs now and in the future? Who will play a role in helping me with decision making? Do you ask yourself these same questions? Aging in Place Strategies and Answers can help you gain practical knowledge that will help you create your own aging in place roadmap. If you are already a care partner, a power of attorney, or in crisis mode with your aging in place strategy, you will learn what you need to know that you don't know. For over 20 years, I have been marketing aging in place services to clients and educating families and healthcare professionals in how to put aging in place strategies into place. When you utilize aging in place, you are allowed to choose where you want to live and make those decisions so that you can retain your quality of life. Senior living communities are popping up on every corner, but very few people know what levels of care they provide or what that actually means until they start to look for a property to move to. Thank you for joining me today so that you and I can get educated on senior living and less confused about senior living options. One of my podcasts shared more information about medical care models and how the direction has shifted into person-centered care models. I also mentioned that we are just not there yet, but as you age, you will want to come to a new understanding about senior living options. Aging in place is also a model of care, and I included it in the name of my podcast. Aging in place allows you to choose where you want to live so that you can maintain your lifestyle and your quality of life, while adding additional services that will help you to maintain your property value, plus live safely as your care needs start to change. Aging in place is the least restrictive senior living environment, and it is also the one that most seniors would choose when given choices. The most restrictive care environment is a long-term care community, and it is reserved for those who need safety oversight and 24-hour care assistance and supervision. An assessment is needed for admission to long-term care to make sure that they can meet the resident's care needs mentally as well as physically. Some long-term care residents need a community that has very experienced staff that can assist with trachs, vents, and dialysis. Many long-term care residents' care plans include help with mobility or the use of a mechanical lift to get in and out of bed or chair. Most long-term care residents need help with dressing, grooming, bathing, medication administration, and would not be able to take care of their laundry or make meals or take their medications appropriately. And you can usually recognize a long-term care community because they will have a corporate name in front of skilled nursing and rehabilitation community as part of the name. Now, before I go any further in this discussion, I believe that it is safe to say that knowledge is power, but ignorance is not bliss. I understand and acknowledge that the topics that I am exploring are difficult to discuss, but my goal in my podcast is to help you have the information, the facts, and the resources you will need to make an informed decision. For those of us who have had to wade through these waters, not making a decision or regretting a decision we have made is what usually keeps us up at night. Don Quante wrote a book called Don't Go Broke in a Nursing Home. In the book, he writes that there is a common misconception about health insurance paying for the cost of long-term care. Health insurance, including Medicare, Medicare supplements, HMOs, private insurance through employers, disability insurance, these were never designed to pay for the cost of long-term care. Let's review what we've learned so far. Long-term care is the most restrictive environment. It is for those with a high level of mental or physical disability. It is not paid for by any health insurance. Please do not be confused with living in a long-term care community and a short-term rehabilitation stay, which is sometimes offered through your medical health insurance. Now let's move on and continue to add to our knowledge. If insurance doesn't pay for long-term care, then who does? Long-term care is paid for by the resident out of their assets. It is private pay. And if or when they run out of assets, they must meet the Medicaid eligibility requirements. And then, once Medicaid is approved, it will take over the cost of care. When it comes to placement in a long-term care community, you will need to interview communities and ask, how many months would you need to private pay before your loved one can be moved to a Medicaid pending bed? Each community has its own requirements, and some long-term care communities are only private pay. Please note that it is sometimes very difficult to find a community with open Medicaid pending beds or open Medicaid beds. Advanced planning is a necessity when a long-term care community is the logical next step. And this is why so many attorneys and financial planners are in a new role with clients who want more of a life plan strategy, which is proactive rather than reactive. Well, we've learned that medical health insurance is not a payer source for long-term care communities, but there are insurance companies that sell policies that can help with the cost of long-term care. These policies are usually called long-term care insurance. This kind of policy could offer benefits toward the cost of long-term care, but you will need to meet the requirements of the policy before the insurance company will reimburse you for the cost of care. Be aware that each long-term care policy is different, so you need to do your homework. If you have already purchased a long-term care policy or your aging parents have a long-term care insurance policy, get it out. Take a look at it. You can actually read the language in this policy. It's pretty easy to read. Write the terms of the policy on the cover page. Write down how much they will pay, if there is an elimination period, and how long they will pay on the front of the policy sheet. In addition, note any numbers to call or websites you will need when it is time to file a claim against the policy. The Veterans Administration also provides benefits for veterans who need a long-term care community. I have a premium podcast on veterans benefits that you can listen to. But if you are the care partner for a veteran or providing care for a veteran, it is important that you meet with a veteran service officer to see what benefits are available now and in the future when additional care is needed. Because there are very few VA hospitals, clinics, and VA long-term care communities, the VA has contracts with medical providers and select nursing homes to provide care for veterans needing long-term placement. Even though long-term care living is restrictive, residents' rights are to be protected. Our federal government funds state-run long-term care ombudsman programming to ensure that residents' rights are upheld. They will also investigate, advocate, and mediate situations that might arise between the resident and the community. If you care for someone who is aging or who is already in a long-term care community living environment, Google the long-term care ombudsman program in your area. Hopefully, you will not need their number, but if someone else does, you will know how to guide and direct them. Over my lifetime, I have had aging relatives who needed a long-term care living solution. I was very thankful that this solution existed, but in honesty, I have found myself frustrated, angry, and at a loss for how to improve the quality of life for my relative. I do not want you to have these same feelings, but you probably will. So being prepared and having this knowledge will be very helpful. Let's take a break and have a word from our sponsor.
The Neptune Society is the oldest and largest cremation service in the United States. For over 50 years, the Neptune Society has been proud to provide signature service to the families they've served. With a prearranged funeral plan, you can declare what you want done at the time of your passing, pay for it in advance, and not leave your survivors with the cost of your final arrangements. Call 314-266-2898. That's 314-266-2898.
In Season 1 of Aging in Place, Strategies and Answers, I explained that seniors are a protected class and have rights under the law. The same is also true for all residents living in a licensed community. The law requires nursing homes to promote and protect the rights of each resident and stresses individual dignity and self-determination. Many states have also included residents' rights in state laws or regulations, but here is a list of the rights for a long-term care resident. They have the right to a dignified existence, to be treated with consideration, respect, and dignity, and recognize their individuality. They have the right to be free from abuse, neglect, exploitation, and misappropriation of property. They also have the right to be free from physical or chemical restraints. They have the right to have their quality of life maintained or improved, and they are able to exercise these rights without interference, coercion, discrimination, or reprisal. A home-like environment and the use of personal belongings whenever possible is also one of their rights, as well as equal access to quality care and the security of their possessions. Each resident also has a right to self-determination. They can choose the activities, they can make their schedules, they can choose their health care and providers, including their attending physician. And the community is supposed to make reasonable accommodation of needs and preferences. Residents are able to participate in developing and implementing a person-centered plan of care that incorporates personal and cultural preferences, and they have choices about who they can designate as a representative in charge of administering or exercising their rights, and they can participate and organize resident and family groups to be a part of. They also have the right to request, refuse, or discontinue treatment. All of us, like this one, they have the right to be fully informed of the type of care to be provided, the risks of that kind of care, and the benefits of those treatments. They are to be informed to any changes in the plan of care in their medical or their health status. They are also to be given a copy of the resident's rights, as well as the rules and regulations, and a contact for the long-term care ombudsman program, and a copy of the state survey agency, as well as the number of the state surveying agency. They also have the right to get written notice before a change in roommate or roommate, and the notices and any additional information is to be in a language or manner that he or she understands, perhaps a foreign language, maybe Braille if they're blind. Residents in long-term care communities have the right to raise grievances, and they have the right to present those grievances without discrimination or retaliation or the fear of it. And I had to do this for my mother when she was living in long-term care. I was pretty nervous, but I was really pleased with the way the community listened and then created a report and then investigated my mother's concerns and then got back with both of us to share what remediation they had put into place. And so that is also a part of what the community must do to resolve grievances and provide a written decision if requested. A resident has the right to file a complaint with the Long-Term Care Ombudsman Program or the State Survey Agency. They have the right of access to individuals, services, community members, and activities inside or outside the facility. They can choose who they want to visit and who they don't want to visit, and they have the right to refuse visitors. They have a right to see their personal medical records as well as his or her personal physician and representatives from the State Survey Agency and Long-Term Care Ombudsman Program. And then, of course, accommodations for sensory impairments, if they exist, and the ability to participate in social, religious, as well as community activities. Now, the rights regarding financial affairs. Residents in long-term care communities, if they're able, can manage his or her own financial affairs, and they're given information about available services and charges for each service. They are allowed to have personal funds of more than $100 or a limit of $50 for residents whose care is funded by Medicaid. And they're to be deposited by the facility in a separate interest-bearing account, and financial statements are to be given quarterly upon request. Residents are not to be charged for services that are already covered by Medicaid or Medicare, and they have their right to privacy regarding their personal, financial, and medical affairs. And they are allowed to have private and unrestricted communication with any person of their choice and during treatment and care of personal needs. They have the right to privacy. Now, if there is a discharge or a transfer, they have the right to appeal transfer and not to be discharged while that appeal is pending. Residents should be receiving a 30-day written notice of discharge or transfer that will include the reason, the date, the location they're going to, the appeal rights and process, and the name and contact information for the long-term care ombudsman. Preparation and orientation to ensure safe and orderly transfer or discharge, and the notice of the right to return to the facility after hospitalization or therapeutic leave. So you can see there is a whole host of rights that residents and long-term care communities do have, even though we call it a restrictive environment. Now, next week, I have an interview with Cheryl Wilson, her company name is Advocacy for Seniors. And you are just not going to want to miss that interview. Cheryl has a wealth of knowledge and experience from her career working for the St. Louis Long-Term Care Ombudsman Program that's called VOICE. And she has also investigated elder abuse complaints. So she is very knowledgeable and experienced. Now, remember, the Ombudsman Program is a federally funded, state-administered advocacy organization. This organization works to resolve problems related to the health, safety, welfare, and rights of individuals who live in long-term care facilities, such as nursing homes, board and care communities, and assisted living facilities, plus other residential care communities. Ombudsman programs promote policies and consumer protections to improve long-term services and supports at the facility, local, state, and national levels. The Local Ombudsman Program exists to identify, investigate, and resolve complaints made by or on behalf of the residents. They also provide information to residents about long-term skilled stays. They ensure that residents have regular and timely access to ombudsman services, and they represent the interests of residents before governmental agencies and seek administrative, legal, and other remedies to protect residents. Plus, they analyze, comment on, and recommend changes in laws and regulations pertaining to the health, safety, welfare, and rights of residents. In my research, I learned that the five most frequent nursing facility complaints handled by ombudsman programs were improper eviction or inadequate discharge planning, unanswered requests for assistance from staff, lack of respect for residents, poor staff attitudes, the administration and organization of medications, and quality of life issues, specifically resident-roommate conflict. We can all agree that the COVID-19 pandemic changed our world forever, especially when it comes to long-term care communities. Seniors inside those communities were dying at unprecedented rates, but families, friends, power of attorneys, and hospice were barred from visiting. Now, in our post-COVID world, we learned some lessons, and there will never be a time again when family cannot enter or hospice cannot come and provide care within a long-term care community. Now, when I visit long-term care communities and there's an outbreak of COVID or influenza, there's a big sign on the door, and you're being notified and advised to wear a mask if you choose to enter that community. There is also a big sign on the door of long-term care communities asking that if you are sick, that you plan appropriately by masking or even staying out of the community until you are well. In addition, I've seen some communities posting that there are cameras on their property and in resident rooms, and these cameras are usually at the request of the resident or a decision maker who feels that this would be in the resident's best interest. The only way to know and to understand what kind of care is being delivered is to request a copy of the care plan, or to request a care plan meeting from the social worker over long-term care residents. Visiting is another way to meet the supervisors and gauge how your long-term care resident is doing in their environment. Learn who to talk to when you have questions or a misunderstanding has occurred. My interview with Cheryl Wilson will be very interesting because she has written several books on advocating for the long-term care resident, as well as how to find a long-term care community and what to look for. Here are some things that I feel as a professional you need to know about long-term care planning. If you feel that long-term care planning is needed for a person who has changing mental or physical health care needs, start planning now with your attorney and your financial advisor. Visit a long-term care community. Ask them how many months you will need to private pay before being eligible for state-funded Medicaid. I hope that you're sitting down for this, or if you are driving, keep those hands on the wheel. On average, the daily rate for long-term care shared room is about $325 a day and about $12,000 a year. If Medicaid planning is needed, consult with an attorney. The application is easy as long as you have all the documentation in order. Because there is a 5-year look back, giving money or property away to decrease assets is ill advised. It is better to consult a professional. Find someone who can help you complete the Medicaid application process, because it will require a full account of all assets, investments, properties owned, businesses, and even policies sold by insurance companies before they will deem a person Medicaid eligible. So, are there other options that exist other than long-term care that can help me plan? Maybe I don't want to be considering that. One of the main reasons you and I have to ask that question is that I have not noticed any new long-term care communities being built. So many, many communities are at capacity at a time when even more seniors will be aging. In fact, in our news, we have heard of communities being closed because they're unable to staff the community and provide reasonable care. Should you consider options that are supplemented by their assets, the VA or Medicaid, but allow your loved one to continue to live at home? I have heard families of long-term care residents and even families of residents in assisted living say, "I wish I hadn't sold my parents' home. I wish they had a home to move back to." Unfortunately, we didn't really know what care would consist of and how my loved one would assimilate into the environment, and we just moved too quickly. You might want to consider the PACE programs that are offered in big cities. And of course, adult day programming is a wonderful option because the client or the patient or the adult who's aging or has developmental disabilities is out of the property for the day and then comes home at night to sleep. Fully funded community living paid for by the state could become unsustainable in the future with the number of seniors aging at a rate that is going to be unprecedented. And of course, the shift from medical model to person-centered care model has led us away from the most restricted living environment to the least restrictive environment. So this is why we need to consider what other options might be available. One more important point cannot be excluded. Staffing remains one of the most serious issues facing all senior care communities, but most especially the long-term care community. And I am sad to say that it could be the straw that breaks the camel's back. I also have read about elder living units and multi-generational families that could be a great solution that will be able to provide care for aging relatives, but also help out families where there are two workers leaving the home every day and who need childcare or could use some help around the house. Well, I thank you for listening to me today, and please tune in again next week for my interview with Cheryl Wilson of Advocacy Number 4, Seniors. But here is my caregiver tip for today. One day, I met a lady who was living in an affordable senior housing community, and she told me that her husband had become sick and they had spent all of their assets paying medical bills and caring for him. Caregivers always give everything they have to help someone else, but it is also important for caregivers to be protected. Caregivers, please be aware that there's a federal law called Prevention of Spousal Impoverishment. This law provides a way to protect some of a person's assets for a spouse when they are living in a nursing facility, getting nursing care, or asking for home and community-based services. The law also allows for setting aside income for a spouse or dependents if needed. So check with your attorney to learn more. And thank you for all you do. Thank you for joining me today. Please remember that this podcast is intended as guidance and not advice. Share this podcast with friends and family who are currently in crisis mode or with people who would like to start developing their own roadmap for aging in place. Listeners, if you would like a deeper dive into a topic discussed during a podcast, please subscribe to Aging in Place Strategies and Answers, where you will be able to access premium content. Or if you would like to suggest a topic for this podcast, please contact me at linda.agingstrategies@gmail.com. As always, I value the time you spend with me.